Paul Mayer's Children's Television Archive.
Everything doesn't have to be sweetness and cream. You remember things sometimes if they are a little edgy and you're putting something down. It was a parody on commercials.
I think that's what makes, that's what they're looking for now in television.
Yeah.
It used to be that they wanted the beautiful person.
Yeah, now they want
now people. They want the strangos. The ones with the big noses. And
that's
the ones that are too tall and too,
too
fat.
That's right, yeah. And but a lot of my, I still think if I wanted to stay in that end of it, when I was writing commercials, as a writer, I think I wrote pretty doggone effective stuff, and I got humor, I got attention getters, and so on and so. But basically, I got relationships. If it was two people talking together, you believe those people. And like I have ones over here that I could show you where the ones I like best are between a man and a woman, where you build a relationship, a warm relationship. So that after his little calling,
once he gets up here,
because he settles down, I think the relationship makes you like the product. You know, like I had one I wrote for just as a dummy for the workshop, but I think it's a good commercial. I could do a whole campaign for Campbell's Soup, and all it is based on nostalgia. It can be rustic, city, anything. It's people talking about the past, where Campbell's Soup has a generic reason for being, where this is like somebody stops at a little farm and it's just a monologue, and the guy says, I never knew no neighbors like them. They was something. He never borrowed nothing. Well, you know, well, maybe once in a while, like a couple cans of Campbell's chicken soup. Everybody likes Campbell's. But no all the time-y thing. Mm-hmm. Like I remember one time when little Johnny got hurt, and we wasn't home, and what he did, he went next door and he asked the DuPontics, that's some folks I'm telling you about, what to do, and they fixed him up fine. They called old Doc Swine, and he fixed him up. And then they had him to have supper with him and watch TV till we come on home. They give him Campbell's chicken noodle soup. That was Johnny's favorite. And then we went on home. I never knew no neighbors like Campbell's Soup. And to have that on radio, just that little vignette, that little believable guy. And Johnny may be now 30 years old, has three kids, lives on a farm 40 miles away. But he's going back in a moment. He's transported to a little six-year-old Johnny. And he loves him now just as much as he did then. And I think there's great love in that, see, great compassion. And that's the kind of stuff I would always write, see. Always had the human factor. But not these mutants that get on, and you know the way they talk with the soap. Like, what are you using on that, Beth? Oh, I'm using so-and-so. Does it work for you? Always has. Why don't you try it? Well, I don't know. I've always been.
You see, millions of housewives are using. Yeah.
People don't talk like that, and so I don't know. But it's just that I couldn't stand the agency interference of having a thing sculled to death and then put aside and then a revision and then that and then finally what was a nice little spot to begin with is now watered down to the point where it's garbage. And I figured if I was doing all right otherwise, who needs it? Yeah. And like I don't want to slam. In other words, my material for the workshop and the ultimate book and material. But that's it. I'll either sell it that way or I won't sell it.
Are you gonna do a book?
Yeah. I don't know when. I've got all the material. I've got enough for three books.
Been working on it for a lifetime.
Well, yeah, and most of that stuff I wrote in the last 4 years. You know, those shelves are just full of stuff. Monologues, dialogues, comedy, serious,
as you say, you feel
poetry.
Getting better.
Oh, sure, yeah. Because I'm doing it. The muscle is always flexed. And
do you have a little more time now than you used to when you were?
Oh, yeah. Sure, that's another thing, I have more time. And I get up early and write at the, you know, the great part of the day when nothing happened, like from 6 to 9 or so on. And but the concepts that come up and see, I like to build the excitement of taking two people and in three lines they're into something which is not them. And I say you cannot just read it off the page. I do not want the intelligence of the line. I want you to be that person. And sometimes they're not very pleasant people. They're a brother and sister fighting, hating each other. And a child and a mother and whatever. But
do you get residual payments for your voiceovers that you have done?
The commercials?
You brought Huckleberry Hound back on. Would you get payment for that, or do they
pay? Oh, no.
One payment?
I did on that Thanksgiving thing because they were using it in a different media. But when it went into distribution or syndication, I don't get anything, see? Those paid off about 14 payments, and that was it. So, like, we started maybe in 1958 or 9, and we were through with the Huckleberry Hounds and Yogis and all that by maybe 65, you know? Mm-hmm. And then the residuals went on for maybe another 3 years, and then that was all gone. Mm-hmm. But the commercials, as long as they use them, well, you get paid.
And you say you did personal appearances for a while, but you don't do that many anymore?
Not as much. In fact, I did some academic things at Loyola and Beverly High and teaching a class every week, like an adult class in sensitivity or relating and whatever. But it's too demanding. So what I like to do now is like go out to a university, do a 3 or 4 hour symposium, run the reel, bring people up, read things with them, read commercials, show them how I mark copy. So that, like, in one fell swoop, they've got a million things to remember or take down on their cassette players, and then I'm through with it. But I'd rather have encounters.
But you really don't like doing, personal appearances for children.
I like it when it comes along and when it's proper. I don't like the auditorium situation that much. I would rather go to a school. And sometimes, like Jim Brown, that does the specials on the news, you know, it's 6. I went out to his school around Christmas time, and he had like a daughter in the 3rd grade and a son in the 4th grade. Well, they just isolated those 2 grades, brought them in the library, and I did the whole thing. I could have done it for the whole school, but this was doing him a favor, doing the kids a favor, and the other ones didn't know that much about it. They might have heard about it. But it made it easier for me. I like to have them right with me.
Interrelate with your children.
Where they can touch me, yeah.
You can't do it with an audience.
With a big audience. That's right.
You know, when you were with Associated Professional Talent, you're not still with them.
Right? No, huh?
When you were with them.
That was kind of a spotty type thing.
I mean. Yeah, they weren't very together either.
No.
I mean, they gave you a great sales job, but when it really came down to selling you, and the schools, they were too busy performing themselves.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
No, there was one time where I got a call, and they said, well, Dawes Butler was supposed to show up at this school. Could you do it?
Uh-huh. Oh, really?
Yeah, and I said, what would you like me to do it on? Because I was doing mime at the time, I did puppets.
Oh, wow.
And so, because that was my two fields, mm-hmm. that I could do either one.
Yeah.
And they said, well, his talk was supposed to be somewhat on language development.
Oh, because they had to give it a name, yeah.
Yeah, something, you know, yeah. Something educational.
Yeah, that's true.
And so all of these children weren't told that Dawes Butler wasn't going to be there.
Hmm.
So when they came off those buses. There were 10, 15 buses.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
I mean, hundreds of kids.
That's terrible.
Big auditorium.
Yeah.
And I was backstage. I said, they've been told now, haven't they, that Dawes isn't coming? And they said, no.
Oh, God.
And I said,
terrible.
Oh, my gosh, how can I? I can't do Dawes Butler, you know?
Yeah.
I can't go out there and say I'm him.
Yeah, yeah.
But
you should
have. And I went out there and I said, I'm so sorry that I'm not Dawes Butler, but I'll try and give you a good time.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did talk a little bit about language development, about, you know, how language started, you know, communication with cavemen, and, you know, I went through the, you know, and how people have different languages and how people communicate through music and writing, and I did a few examples. But when I finally did, I said, people like Dawes, you know, and I said, smarter than they are. I did a better job then because I had the microphone.
Oh, right, yeah.
You know, and it sounded so good over the microphone.
Yeah.
I go, ah, so I'm like, you know. I don't know if it was because of the pressure that I had to do it good or what, but it sounded good over them, you know, and that right away,
and
it was the first spark of excitement out of them. They all went, they clapped, you know, because I think that's what they were waiting for.
Yeah.
Was that?
Yeah, it was one of those deals where I had to do something because of clients being out here.
Yeah, they said you had another job.
And you see, I shouldn't have gotten involved in that in the first place because it was too delicate. In other words, I could not ever say definitely I can be there, yeah, you know? So, yeah. So even now, I have to be very, very cagey with school things. Maybe that's one of the reasons that I haven't done as much. The very fact that I don't like to disappoint people.
You don't like to disappoint.
Yeah. And or sometimes if it's in the evening, like I've done Cub Scout things and whatever. But the thing about those puppets, it's fantastic. I can, like at the KISS workshop, when I was there doing a 3-hour deal with 5 groups, I do 15 minutes at the end with these characters and all the philosophy and all the things about relating and word shaping and all this.
Well, they're all kids at heart.
Sure. And the minute I got them out, whoa, that was the best part of the show. You know.
They grew up with them.
Sure. And
now you mentioned Jack Chapton.
Oh, yeah.
Your puppets.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to give him just a little bit of credit.
Oh, you really should. Oh, yeah, because he's one of the dearest men in the world. And he's done just big things, you know. He's built whole amusement parks for Japan, of all places, you know. And floats for Disneyland and, you know, Jack stuff.
Yeah.
And, I really, that would be great. But you see, the thing that really is terrific is that, not being a ventriloquist, the way these characters, it's like the old, strictly the Jack Benny technique, where I'd bring him out and then Huck would look at me, kind of just look at me. And even though there's no movement on the face except what's there, you know what the puppets can do. And he'd say, how come? Hmm? How come? I said, what do you mean, how come? You know what I mean, how come? Well, I mean, how come you waited all this time to bring out the headliners? You know, then they would all laugh. Like, yeah, yeah. Here he's wasted 2.5 hours with all this garbage, and we're in that damn suitcase, you know? And they love that, you know, any kind of a put down. And then I'd say, Huck, it isn't really in your nature to be that way, to be picky. So, well, you stay in a bag like that for a few hours,
yeah,
just waiting to get out, and you just blurt, you know? And I write better material for them than they get on the air, you know. But it comes out of my psyche, and each one adds ad libs as puppets do in their own way, you know.
And you have a stage that straps to you. Or is that...
Well, it's just going over my head. Let's see, I think I've got it. Yeah, right over here. Yeah, my hips. And I don't know if anybody else has ever used this. I had this made up. Jack made it up.
Yeah, I'd like to mention that.
See, and I just...
That's beautiful. You can rest your elbows. It takes the weight off the...
Oh, sure. It's great. Beautiful. Yeah. And if it is a special occasion where I want to have notes or say, oh, I'm Mr. So-and-so, and this I can put little notes right in and read them.
Great. And they're the perfect height where they almost match up on your head.
Oh, sure.
The height of your head.
So that's a good little gimmick. And I like to do schools and things like that, but I like to do it better where I can be in a little school library, have them all sitting on the floor in a little semicircle, and they love it when Huck or Yogi talks about one of the teachers, or like if one of the teachers walked over to say something to me, and oh, this fractured, and this is like,
yeah,
big material,
yeah,
they spent,
yeah, yeah.
And she'll walk over and say, oh, Mr. Butler, I wanted to, and while she's doing that, Yogi will go and give her a kiss,
yeah, yeah.
And they'll say, oh, he kissed, you know,
yeah.
They love that stuff, so. But you've gone through all this. You know the way to get to kids. It's so simple, really. That's where the network says that's idiots, because they're going around in ever-widening circles and missing it every time.
Yeah, John Rovick.
Oh, sure, Sheriff John.
I did an interview with him, and he was speaking that his followers would call him, and he could actually come out to the hospitals. But he thinks it's ridiculous because now there are so very few figures,
mm-hmm,
that are personalities.
That's right.
Live personalities.
Yeah.
That it's almost impossible to have Huckleberry Hound or Yogi Bear come out to the hospitals.
Yeah.
You know, unless they were to dress up in a costume. Or
that's
something.
Right. Oh, sure.
And I guess that's what makes. I guess you really break a barrier. You break down a wall.
Yeah.
Because they really, I think that they forget that there's any life to them or there's anybody real behind them at
all.
That's
it, sure.
So,
well, I used to go to, Now, I haven't done this for quite a while. I should get reactivated, except their attitude to me was so funky that it annoyed me a little. I did it in spite of that, just for the kids. But I used to go down to Children's Hospital about every 4 months or so, and I would walk around the wards. And it was pretty bad. A lot of little girls, you know, were losing their hair, the blood cancer and so on. But I would walk in up to the little thing with the two characters and talk with them. And some of them would even be afraid, you know, to see these big animals.
Sure.
But I'd spend, you know, an hour, whatever, and just walk around the whole ward, go in every little room where I was allowed or wasn't contagious or whatever. And the way those kids, like, the greatest thing in the world to hear is when one of the nurses or whoever was taking you through would say, yeah, it's the first time she's laughed in 3 weeks, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's power. That's the kind of power to have.
The biggest thing of their lives.
Sure, that's right. And I remember, you know, one little girl, she was dying of leukemia, and remember she was under, they had the net over the thing and the oxygen and so on. And I didn't say much because she was half comatose almost. You know, I just said,
Joey,
look
over. Too much.
Yeah. Huh? Didn't know. And I just said, hey, how you doing? So and so. And, you know, this broke my heart because she just, you could just barely hear her and she said, I love you, Yogi. You know, like that. And then the next time I went over there, you know, it was a few months later, she died. That's probably one of the last, that was it. That was toward the end. And yet
that's
that was one
feedback.
Of the characters. Huh?
That's your feedback.
That's your feedback.
That's your credit.
That's the credit. Absolutely. That is the credit. Sure. And that's dynamite. So you can't buy that. So I'm getting spread so thin, but I should try to set up the Children's Hospital thing again. But then again, now my hip is bothering me, and I don't like to be involved in all that much trucking around, you know. I'm taking therapy, and it'll loosen up. It's my own fault for being a non-exerciser, but...
Is that what it's from?
Probably, because I never exercised.
The arthritis?
Partly. Yeah, something in the cartilage on the left hip, you know, it's drying up a little. But the hamstrings are tight, and I have to stretch those, and I take a jacuzzi every morning, you know, and I have one in the house. And little by little, I can feel it getting better and better. But after sitting for a while, there's a tightness when you get up and all that. But
I'm afraid of that myself, that I'll have to get up and do some exercise.
Yeah.
I'm young now, but later it'll catch up with
better to do it now, you know, and be used to it, because I just don't like to exercise. And it bores me is the trouble. Like even when I take the jacuzzi, I work a crossword puzzle,
yeah.
You know, and then the 25 minutes goes like that, mm-hmm. See. But if I was just sitting there, it would drive me out of my mind. And I put on KUSC, I got that in a portable radio, so it won't electrocute me. I got KUSC playing classical music, and I got the crossword puzzle book.
Yeah, and that's what I feel when I'm in the car, and that's why I have that machine.
Yeah.
I listen to interviews, or I listen to talk radio.
Right.
Something
that's,
just to stay
that's
in touch.
The way.
You know.
And I've recorded a lot of things, like I have a marvelous recording that George C. Scott and Colleen Dewhurst and Barry Sullivan did about 7 or 8 years ago, called The Price, Arthur Miller, magnificent play. One of the best things Miller ever did. It was on KCET, ran about 3 hours. It's on a 180-minute cassette, and I've played that in the car, I don't know how many times, when I really have to be captive audience. Every time I hear it, I'll swear there are things I've never heard before. I mean, that to me is a play. That's dialogue. Because he dips in, it's all memory, nostalgia, going back in time. The two brothers who hated each other, that didn't get together. Now they're selling their father's estate. All the dirty linen is being aired. And that to me is what dialogue should be. That's why dialogue is dialogue. You know, you mentioned something about puppets, and maybe in a minisecond, something happens back in time for Beanie. Something that you say. And I don't call that up. But you might say so-and-so-and-so-and-so-and, I say, yeah, we did that one summer on Time for Beanie. And that's dialogue, mm-hmm. Because it prompted me. That's the difference.
Now, I read in an article here that Hanna-Barbera is going into all these different countries, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And I was curious, Different languages?
Oh, yeah, they've been in different languages for years, yeah.
Now, do you speak any different languages?
No.
No. Do you code, do you work with the other voice people that are like the Mexican?
No.
You've never coached them or done any?
No, because I've seen some. I've seen Japanese, I've seen French, German, Italian. And they just get comedians in these countries, and they have to follow the lip sync and the characters, which isn't much, you know, so it's very free. But I found a closer identity with Yogi, for instance, in the French or the Italian, because there's a frenetic something, which is almost like the way I do it. So if the French Yogi would be like, je vous envoie le mensonger, le mensonger, le point zéverant, ranger. Fine, it works fine.
It's nice.
But when you get into the German thing, and it's more like, je sveilig schindig bubu, bachos vreilig schindig fiedig sein. It doesn't really work, see? Yeah. And then you see Huckleberry Hound in Japanese, and how are you going to do a Southern American dog with a but it works, you know. But they were, they're translated in, I don't know, 17 or 18 languages, about 80 countries. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
And
I was just wondering if you ever met with these people.
No. It'd be fun to do, yeah.
Yeah.
But they don't, they do a lot of them in Mexico, I think, or even South America, and it sort of fans out in all the Latin American countries. You know, they do it for all the Latin American.
Now, do they come to Hanna-Barbera here to record them, or?
No, I think they do them in the field over there. They send them a breakdown of the script, and it's translated, and then they have to make it fit the mouth as well as they can, and then they do it. And these characters are very, very popular in many ways, much more than here, like in England. When I've met English people, like even a mechanic that worked on a Volvo I had, he had a great Cockney voice. I used to like to talk to him, you know. He said, yeah, we used to watch Yogi Bear all the time, you know, in London. It was marvelous. And we used to have it in the theaters. I didn't even know this or my age. Before they had that much television, they ran it in theaters, you know. And Snagglepuss, oh, we always watched that. And so you realize, and they really loved it.
They listened to your voice.
Oh, sure. They heard me, right. But
and you do Australia and New Zealand or Canada?
Well, any of the American-speaking things. And also the interesting thing is I'm doing a series of commercials. Somebody just saw over there, in fact, it was Mel Blanc's son, Noel, said he was in England and he saw some commercials that I'd done for Heinz, where Yogi and Boo Boo are the spokesman for, they call it, I think it's Heinz Big Soup. And Yogi says, it's better than the average soup. You know, and they're at a picnic party and all the picnickers have soup and they give him a bowl and it's so great. He says, oh, there's so much there, I can't even finish it. You know, and so those are very popular commercials.
So what has died here may have been picked up there 2 years later.
That's right.
That's how long it takes for the product to get there.
Yeah, although England always has been one of the biggest countries, I think, for really digging the characters. But I don't know. I still go back to material. Because, I mean, I don't think, as much as I enjoyed doing them on these comeback shows like the Laugh Olympics and so on, it's not the same. It's not Huck and Yogi or Snagglepuss. It looks like them, but it's not the same. It's like going back to an old neighborhood.
Well, you have the advantage to where you do the voice before the cartoon's done.
Yeah, that's right.
It's difficult for them because they're worrying more of the time about how to lip sync.
That's right. Oh, sure. Right. Yeah.
When did you start your studio here? You've always done workshops, but when did you start this?
Well, this is the first workshop as a workshop. People used to ask me for advice on how to do an accent or how to do a dialect or things, even in radio, you know. How do you do this or do that? How do you scream? One girl had to do a thing where it was traumatic, and I took her in a recording studio where it was soundproof and said, now scream, and I intimidated her, you know, I just walked, and she went, wah! I said, okay, do the same thing in the air, but just imagine me coming at you, you know, do little psyching type things. And then about 4 years ago, Joni Gerber, who was very big in the voiceovers for gals, and had had a workshop for 2 or 3 years, and she invited me out to speak at a workshop one night. And I took the puppets with me, and I must have been out there 3 or 4 hours, and they were such a captive audience, and I had given them things they had never gotten from her, because I go into it with such depth, you know, that then I went to a guy's workshop named Randy Van Horn, and his deal consisted mainly of getting commercial producers from agencies to talk to people so they get to get acquainted. And I went over there and spent about 3 hours, and from it I pulled about 3 or 4 people who were the nucleus of my workshop, because everybody kept saying, why don't you get a workshop? And I thought, what would I do? You know, really, there's another thing going back to this modesty thing, or the ego undeveloped. I really didn't think that I had enough to offer. And then when I started, I realized I'd never run out of things to do. So I started with a little girl who was doing very well in the business now. In fact, it was very, very exciting. The other day, I went out to Film Fair to audition for something, for Keebler Crackers, which is Middle Western, and my first student beat me out on the reading, which is terrific.
Yeah.
He didn't read with me, but I asked the engineer later who had gotten the thing, and he mentioned a couple names. And one was Brian Cummings, who was my friend. He used to beg me. He was a disc jockey, and I met him along the line. He said, I want to come to you and learn how to do dialects, and how to do this, and how to do that. And so he was my first student, and about the first 3 weeks, he was the only one here. Then this girl came in, and another guy, and finally had about 5 or 6. And then I built this marvelous renaissance of about 25 people. And then they've all gone on different ways. I see them occasionally, and I'm available.
So you work with them together at times, and then again separately.
Yeah, that's right. Some are private students. There's a gal coming here too. And but the point is, they move out, and our relationship stays the same. That is, when they need me, they know that I'm there for advice or like a mentor. Mm-hmm. But I gave them the confidence and the courage. See, they had the talent.
Where do you get your knowledge of these different dialects? Have you studied with anyone like Richard Eastman? Or
no, just my ear. See, he works very technically. And Bobby Eastman.
I went to one of his workshops, and I couldn't pick up on any of it because he was way above my head.
Yeah.
And there was no place for me to catch on.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, to me, he takes it too seriously. I don't think there's that much call for dialects. There may be. But in many cases, they will call a national who is an American French or American German or whatever. Whereas I have done many things where I will be competing with other Japanese or French, and I will get it. Because I will get the point of the commercial, mm-hmm. where they don't. But I will do it very soft French, without that much, more or less, what you call dialect by degree. It is only a feeling of being French, but I'm doing very little. It's almost me talking. But there's a sound of a word, which gives a tonality, a change, mm-hmm. you know. And
have you traveled abroad to pick up a lot?
No.
You've never been abroad?
No, just people in neighborhoods and maybe listening to televisions, or maybe on a talk show or whatever. But it's just like, it's like a memory bank up there, you know. And so everything I've done has been by observation. I mean, I've never studied anything technically. Even how to mark script, pauses, accents, picking up on a sentence to give it a rhythm so that everything isn't the same cadence. We say ba-ba-ba, ba-ba-ba, and whatever, ba-ba-ba, ba-ba-ba. You know, now it has a form. It's like music. And the decay of a line, which is like a run, where you go, ba-da-da-da-da, boom, 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 you know. It do the same thing with speech. In other words, music and speech is exactly the same to me. And they're whole notes and half notes and the whole bit. Although I don't know anything about music other than loving it and mm-hmm. so on, which is probably the better way.
Have you ever coached singers along the line?
I've coached singers when they've had lines to do to give them character with beyond the notes. Then they have helped me with the timing and how to do the notes and still keep the character. So it works both ways, you know. And my confidence has increased. But for instance, one dialect, see, it's all based on technically on lip placements, jaw, tongue, whatever. There are more dialects in which the tongue is kept on the roof of the mouth than not. The Spanish trill the R a little bit. The Scots need the tip of the tongue. But mostly the tongue is almost dormant. I discovered I had trouble with doing a Hindu accent. And I finally figured it out by... And I always say, now listen to me the way I'm talking now. This is your conflict. This is all you have to work with. You've got to work with that. So I put the tongue in the roof of my mouth like that. So that's all I have to talk with. It restricts the jaw because you can feel the tightening in the muscles right there. That's all the jaw can move. So everything is in the lips. And I can't do any, and the lips are linear. I cannot move them up and down or anything. So now with that, and the British and the Hindustani and the rhythms that they have, see, the music is here. I can't teach you the music. I can only teach you what to do here. So with the tongue in that position, they never said to this, it's very impossible. It's impossible for me to tell you what is going to happen. And when the guru tell me to pray, I go onto my knees. Because when I realize that for myself, in another level, reincarnation, I shall come back as someone I love very dearly, you know? And you get a rhythm that hurry up the witty talk.
That's a very hard dialect to do.
Very difficult, very hard to do, very, very impossible. But I can't say impossible, impossible. Impossible to tell that to a person, to tell that. I can't say tell that, because the tongue is up there, you know? So that by your mind you try to over-articulate as much as you can. So that they know what you are talking about. You know, so this will give me the Hindu accent. Into what they express themselves, you see. So, technique, I can give you rhythm. I mean, music, very difficult. The French by scallops, you say, when I went into that place, it was apparent to me that what I was looking at was blackness, you know? And you can change it around any way you want to, but it's just like broken field running, you know, it's loose.
And you mentioned you had certain signals, you know, dot, dot, and lines.
Oh, yeah.
Have a lot of these, have you started, or is this something that's been along?
Well, everybody's had their way of marking their script. Sometimes people will, if you're going to accent a word or stress it, you'll put a little mark on it. Mine is, I put a line over a word for a vowel spread. Like, I told you not to do that. I told you not to do that. So maybe in the whole line, the only thing I'm really stressing is told. You're talking to a child. I told you not to touch that. And then because I got not to touch that, which is more interesting and not as cosmetic as, I told you not to touch that. Because 10 out of 10 actors will drop on the end of a sentence instead of lifting it. And the lift is the sunlight. That's the positive. Those are the things that give it character. So it's like, I told you not to do that. So you put a little fill-up like that. So if you remember it, it's a very delicate shading, but it's interesting. And it's not as dull. And see, I say, don't just read the word off the line. The line isn't going to do it for you. It's what you do to the line. Or even the answer is tomorrow. And they say, well, you're going to get that or not? And you say, tomorrow? That means, will you get off my back?
But if you say more than just tomorrow.
Yeah, is you're going to do that? Yeah, tomorrow. It's not the same thing. It's the heart going pity-pat and the trauma and the heat across the chest when you're teed off, you know. It all ties in. But it does help. Like, I could take a script I marked a year ago and probably read it identically with the way I read it then. It's like shorthand.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned you were doing a crossword puzzle in the jacuzzi. Jacuzzi. That is a form of studying to you, isn't it? I mean, that's a form of research.
It's mental relaxation to me, yeah. It keeps it active, you know.
How do you do your studying? I mean, what do you read books in the evening, or you say you'd rather write than be entertained?
Yeah, I don't read anymore. In other words, I might read an article, or when the Jack Benny book came out, I had to read that, you know, because he's like a god. But normally, I don't read novels, and I might read an article in a magazine, but 9 times out of 10, I won't. I would rather write, because I've served my apprenticeship. I think I've built up enough vocabulary. I try to be aware of the news, things to write about, but I don't read for relaxation. You know?
Do you watch cartoons?
That's why I like Some of the old ones. I mean, I watch Tom Hatton on Sunday morning because he runs some of the good old black and white Popeyes and the George of the Jungle, most of which I was involved in. But
they have some good ones in the mornings, early in the morning, and then give
it. Oh, the Hucks and Yogis and the Quick Draws. Oh yeah, I watch some of those. And the MGM, I watch, like the one I caught the other day. I forgot all about it.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's exciting to me. If I had a videotape recorder, I would really start recording these things. And then I saw one that I did, probably for Tex, one of those Wolf cartoons. In fact, it was the one that I wrote. Wasn't this funny to me? After all these years, I kept, you know, telling myself, wow, what a great cartoon. Gee, that was funny. Wah, wah, wah. And I finally saw it. I figured the timing was off. And it wasn't Tex who had directed it. I don't think it was somebody else. And it just didn't work. So I accepted it.
You should get yourself a video machine because they're far more cheaper now.
They're only about $1,000.
Yeah, for color.
That's right, sure.
It's amazing.
But these are always the tough things in a family situation. Like my wife wondered why I have a living room full of music, and I have all the music which I don't take the time to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
And I have good speakers in here, Altec Lansing, which are fantastic, and in the house. And tape
way.
Recorders.
I'm
and,
the same way. I know I've collected all of this trivia, all this records galore, and I don't really listen to them.
No.
Once maybe I'll listen to
that's
it.
That's right.
And once you've heard it.
Yeah, that's right.
You know,
like I don't say.
You're busy thinking. It takes away, it drains you.
Yeah, that's right. It does.
To it.
Yeah, and like I subscribed to a chess magazine for years. And I'd work the problems they would put in it, but I wouldn't read the articles and so on. I'd be like, what the hell am I doing now? National Geographic, I glanced through them, you know, but it would be better if I would really, I watch television some nights, like last night I watched some, but, and I'm not writing as much as I did. I think that thing kind of goes in spurts, especially the fact that I don't have to, and I've got so much to draw on. And I know every one of my pieces now, just like, you know, your puppets and so on. And I know that when I get a girl in and she's kind of sensitive and I want to try to trap her psyche and see how she's going to come on, whether I can frighten her into getting rid of that little insecurity that I can sense. I'll say, this will be the piece that will do it. You know, it's like a doctor putting out a prescription.
Mm-hmm.
But the all of the means to an end.
Now, you mentioned that you hadn't been to Europe. I mean, do you do much traveling other than personal appearances? Are you pretty much
very
a homebody?
I am. My wife would love to travel. I mean, at this stage in my life, she would love it if we could just go on a world cruise, you know, and yet she wouldn't like to do
you'd
it alone or with anybody.
Boat, wouldn't you?
Huh?
You'd go to pieces on
I go out of my mind, yeah. I'd either do that or I'd have to be known and entertained and be with people, and then that could get to be a drag too, you see. So it's really that's why I mentioned the other day, I probably won't do it, but the idea of going around to colleges, you know, go to Berkeley and spend 2 days and go somewhere else, and if there was money in that, then she'd get to travel, we get to go to different areas and whatever. But I don't know what it is about traveling. It's like working a jigsaw puzzle. It's like, it was a picture. They took it apart. Now they want me to put it back together again. What's the point? I've seen the Louvre. I've seen the Eiffel Tower. I've seen the Tower of London. I've seen the Sahara Desert. I've seen the pyramids. And film, it's beautiful. Why do I have to go there to see it?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like a ball game. I don't care that much about sports. But I would much rather, and my wife, poor dear, she's always wanted to go to see the Rose Parade. We've never seen it physically. To me, it would be a bore to have to go out there, sit in the bleachers, you know.
You see more on TV.
Of course. But, I mean, that's the rationale.
Yeah.
And so I say, it's the same way with I would much rather watch a tennis match. I love tennis. I would rather watch tennis at home on television than go there because you're doing this all the time. Or you're in a spot, and you always get the end perspective, which is great, slightly elevated, And that will really knock me out. I'll probably really take out time out to watch a good tennis game, because I think it reminds me of chess. It's just, you know, two forces. You can see the minds working. But
what do you do for fun? What do you do that you consider nothing to do with your work, but I mean, just fun?
Do
you have any hobbies? Do you have any collections? I see you have your animals here.
Animals, yeah, whenever I see anything. But there's not that much available anymore. It's very hard to find a bronze or even good wood carvings. If I went to Europe, that's what I'd end up doing around all the shops, you know.
That's what I did. I've been to Europe 4 times now, and every time I go,
wow.
This last time, I just raided. See, I got my own car, that's where I got it, and I just filled that car up with
kinds
of wood carvings.
Sure.
I went to East Germany, and that's where you can pick up
all that. Oh, marvelous, yeah. Well, that's what I would do, except that now I would probably be able to turn off on things quicker, whereas 20 years ago I wouldn't be able to resist it. But I really don't... what I like to do, I mean, I don't eat that much anymore, like once a day, but I would enjoy going out mainly for lunch with my wife, some new place that we've heard about, or maybe drive 50 miles or 20 miles, or make a sort of an afternoon out of something. Go away for a weekend to me, to any place, it doesn't matter where it is, it could be Santa Barbara, just so it's away, and just sort of take it easy. But I'd like to have a book of crossword puzzles. See, I can't turn off this damn mind. That's the thing, you know.
Yeah, is that why you do crossword puzzles?
Probably.
You need something to do?
Yeah, and if I'm really relaxed enough, I will read. But sometimes I'll take a book and I just won't be able to relax because the mind is still racing. I mean,
you mentioned you smoked for a long time. I guess it was difficult to stop. Do you have any other crutches?
Not really.
Do you enjoy a drink?
I enjoy a drink once in a while. That's relaxing, and that's a good deal. And I like to listen to music when I've even put things on cassettes and listened to them in the car, where the quality is nothing. Mm-hmm. Just for the information, I was listening to the Bartok Quartets yesterday, going out to the valley, which was great. Mm-hmm. And yet it's no great sound thing. But I really don't have, I don't like the races. They bore the hell out of me. And gambling I don't like. So there's really nothing, I like to do what I do, that's all. It's just a very single faceted thing.
You're a lucky man that you can do what you want to do.
Yeah, I'll say, I'm not frustrated working in a drill press or something, you know.
Yeah.
Like when we go out with our church group or so on, like for brunch, I'm usually the quietest guy in the group. I'm listening to the men talk about the Rams, you know, and I don't know what they're talking about. Mm-hmm. Not just eternalists.
Have you ever had a religious background?
Yeah, I grew up as a Catholic, and my oldest son still goes to the church, and my granddaughters, but the other three have gone off. They still have a religious concept, you know, mm-hmm. But the second boy was just married a couple of weeks ago. He's in a Christian church, but of no particular denomination, you know. And very nice service, terrific. And I'm very, I don't call it liberal, it's just that let every man do what he wants, you know. But I do have a sense of religiosity. I tie in the credit for any composing or creating with some, there's got to be a force out there that that has something to do with it. Or up here, wherever it is, where does that line come from, which leads to a whole story? Mm-hmm. So I think I do have a strong religious morality, ethics relating.
I weighed back at the beginning of the interview. I asked you about your parents. What did they do for a living?
Well, my dad he didn't realize it, but he was like a frustrated advertising man, because when he was your age, he was into what they call the mail order business. It still exists, where you're sending a dollar.
I know the king of mail order, a guy named Joe Carbo.
Oh, Garbo. Oh,
Carbo.
Sure, Carbo. I know Joe.
You know Joe?
Well, I knew him, sure, when he used to do announcing for television commercials.
Yeah, he did Maywood Bell for.
Oh, sure. Oh, Joe Carbo. Yeah,
and
character.
He was down at Channel 11 for a while doing the all-night show.
Yeah.
And he put my mother with her nursery school on for a year for 1 hour in the mornings called the Kinderland Hour.
Oh, he used to come on the show, didn't he? Didn't he appear once in a while?
Well, he not on the Kinderland Hour, but he did the all-night. See, what he did was he cut off the end of his all-night show and gave it to my mother.
Oh, I see. Yeah, so, yeah. So that was great.
It was no difference to him.
Yeah.
And his wife, Betty, you know, did the hosting.
Oh, yeah.
And that went on for 1 year. But I just saw Joe and Betty the other day.
Mm-hmm. How was he?
Oh, they're both doing fine.
That's great, yeah.
He has it made.
Oh, I know. Sure. Well, there's positive thought and going ahead and doing it.
Yeah, I had an idea. See, every time I cook up an idea, I go to this man to get some kind of advice.
Great.
See if he'll back me or something.
Sure, yeah.
My latest endeavor was the old Crown Theater in Pasadena, which was once the Raymond Theater. There was a chance that I could buy that for $100,000.
Oh, wow.
And then there would be $50,000 in repairs.
Yeah.
You know, so I had to go find somebody with money. Mm-hmm. And the idea was to restore this theater to look exactly like it did when it opened. And we would invite the stars of vaudeville and silent screen and stars of the 20s and 30s.
Oh, great, yeah.
And we would rent limousines, from Movie World.
Sure.
And we'd get Army Archer there, and it would be, you know.
Yeah.
And you'd see Johnny Weissmuller and people like that.
Sure.
And I worked in that for 1 year solid, the whole thing. Designing the whole package, the whole package.
Yeah.
And then I went around everywhere trying to sell it.
Couldn't do it.
Couldn't do it.
Oh, wow. Well, you had the experience of doing it.
Oh, that's it.
Yeah.
I met with a man named Iggy Wolfington.
I've heard of him, yeah.
He right now is responsible for the Actors Fund or something like that.
Mm-hmm, yeah. I know that name, yeah.
But yeah, it was a good experience.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but that's to do when you're young like that, and then take your knocks and your rejections and then go on.
I think it's easier to take knocks when you're younger.
Oh, sure.
Because no one knows who you are.
Well, that's right. Yeah, you can walk away. But I mean, that. But the sooner you can get to think of that word conflict, instead, think of it as conflict, not rejection, a conflict. And you keep trying to solve it. If you don't solve it, then the conflict got you. But then as you go on.
It was always a dream in my head. See,
oh,
I paint
sure.
up such fantastic dreams that I realize that they could pop any moment.
Yeah, but the idea is you go ahead and activate them. That's what's neat, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's terrific.
Well, if the dream pops, you're still there on the ground.
Oh, sure. Yeah, that's right. But you got to have them, you know.
Yeah. We're almost done here, but I have on the end of my notes, I thought on the way over here, that the man who does Fred Flintstone, didn't he?
Alan Reed.
Away?
Yeah, about 5 or 6 months ago.
Now, did you work with him very much through
the I worked with him on radio a lot, yeah, because he was a very big, excellent, a very, very good actor. I mean, that's why the Flintstones was the hit that it was, is that to me, Alan Reed was one that had the greatest naturalistic approach. I mean, to doing things with lines, the shaping, the shading. He'd say, Bonnie, did I tell you to come in here or not? Will you please get off here? You know, wow. You saw Fred. He's not a big man. He wasn't much bigger than me. And toward the end, he got very thin because he was sick and whatever. But he was always kind of a heavy man. And he talked like a heavy man. You know, that voice, Fred Flintstone. And that was very typical of the thing. He was on Fred Allen's show. He was one of the regulars doing comedy parts, dialects. He was Falstaff Openshaw, the poet. Tapes or something. And I worked with him on a show that Freeberg and I did called That's Rich, where Freeberg was kind of a Harold Lloyd character trying to make it in the big city. And I was his neighbor, Hugh McHugh. And I was a Southern character, and we had real funny things. And I used to write some of that stuff. And Alan Reed played his uncle, who was really a shyster. And he was always trying to shake his nephew up for some money. And now, Rich is a good deal. I'm sure if we got in, listen, you could give me $50. I know we could get a thing. I'd say, Rich, you better ask so-and-so about that. I don't think it's too big. He goes, my uncle, Hugh, you know. And he was really a Dickens-ish type character. But it was, in a sense, almost like a Fred Flintstone. That outgoing type of thing, wow, great confidence. So I worked with Alan for years. I was a great admirer of his. Mm-hmm. He was good on camera. Just a good actor, period.
Yeah, I wanted just to
beyond journey.
Be asking a few other people about him, so maybe I'll have some kind of profile
sure.
when I'm done.
Yeah, and he was a funny man. He told great stories, and every time he'd go to a session, he'd say, I got a story for you. Listen to this. two guys walk into a delicatessen. You know, I mean, it was just, you couldn't wait for the story, but it was just that his delight in telling you, you know, he probably told it 10 times that day. But yeah. This was like the first time.
Yeah.
He really had that sense of the theater where he was, when he was on. And he was like me in that respect, in that I love an audience, whether it's one person or however, but a sense of relating, you know, understanding that it's accepted.
Now, there's one other thing.
Okay.
I wanted to share some of your written pieces, and I can get back with you later on.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
Right. You shared the cat poems with me, but I'm
right.
sure I love that. You know, but I'm mm-hmm. sure that you have some favorite pieces.
Oh, sure.
What I'd like to do is, you know, you mentioned the other guy who's sending. I'm gonna do the same thing.
With mm-hmm.
you. I'll send back what I can do.
Right.
As
yeah.
far as, and I know you'll cut it up because
oh, sure.
you're the writer, and those are your words. And,
mm-hmm.
But I'll do the best I can to put it in some kind of form.
Okay.
And I might have a few questions that I'll call you on the phone.
Oh, sure.
Just I can put them in. You know.
Absolutely. Well, that's the way it usually works.
Yeah.
Because you can't do it in one fell
swoop.
But I have, you know, writing things that are like two pages or a page, but where they each have a point of view and there's an impetus mm-hmm. to them. It's more than just a written piece. It, mm-hmm. When I wrote it, I didn't know that. I just wrote it. Then afterwards, I realized I can use this for that, mm-hmm. which gives it even a stronger dimension. But I think that's where this outside force helps you, is giving you something. Then you learn how to use it. I always call it being able to accept the gift, because the gift is there, and then you label it, you know, and so on. But that would be neat. Did I give you a copy of the cat thing? The verses?
No. Do you have a copy?
Yeah, that means...
You know, I began to... It's so hard for me to remember, you know. I wish I had that.
Yeah, I thought you might like to have a...
I told my girlfriend. My girlfriend is a cat freak.
And eventually the young man is going to do some illustrations. This is something he did. It isn't that... this is the type of thing he's done so far, which is kind of interesting.
Oh, is it for his illustration?
The illustration, yeah. Bring his portfolio over next week, and I'll work out. In other words, I'll say, you come up with a cat. You know, maybe make me model of what you think would be effective cats. And then if he does, then maybe we'll go further with it. Because I'm not going to do it just to please him. I mean, he should know. In other words, he seems to be... into art enough that we'll talk it over and see if we got a thing going. If we do, I will collaborate on it, you know. Mm-hmm. But I thought you might like a copy of it, because like cats.
Yeah.
And I've got copies.
Yeah.
In fact, if you want to use the restroom, there's one upstairs, you know.
No, I'm fine.
Yeah.
I brought some other things along.
Oh, did you?
I have a question about this one.
Oh.
Maybe you might recognize him, because
that was in...
I like to label everything with mine.
You don't know which character he was?
No, I see he's a bear.
Yeah, well, that was in one of these things that was here, I'll have to go down the list to...
I'm just curious who he was. It's impossible, you know, to do any research once you have something like
that. Yeah.
This. Boy, you sure are a talker, aren't you?
He sure is.
Yeah.
I know it's in here.
About this dude. Who's he? Is that a Hanna-Barbera character?
That looks like it could possibly be Lippy.
I know.
But it's a bad...
But it's a bad one, isn't it?
Very bad.
It's made by Ideal, but I wasn't sure.
Yeah, I think it's the only thing I could possibly think of would be Lippy.
Yeah, with the tongue.
But the tongue, it looks so dumb, and it's not Loopy the Loop, which was a wolf anyway.
It's not Loopy the Loop.
What the devil? It was something about a bear. It's a polar bear, naturally.
I thought he may have even been done for a product.
No, it was a...
I thought you might know offhand. It's not that important.
Yeah, I don't think he may or may not have been the lead character in the thing. But I thought I saw it as we looked through this thing before. It was about the same time as Secret Squirrel and Adam Ant. Mm-hmm. And
here's another one.
I don't think it was Where's Huddles, no. Oh, Roman Holidays, that was another thing I worked in too, but that was didn't amount to anything. No, I don't even see it listed here. Oh, this was, let's see if that's here. Oh, that was oh God, it was Something Puss. It was a takeoff on Jinx and the Meese. And it wasn't McGill a gorilla, but there was a cat and a mouse. And Alan Melvin did the part of the cat, and Howard Morris did the mouse. Mm-hmm. And it was Something and Punkin' Puss. And it's not listed here.
It's like a hillbilly.
Yeah. It's a hillbilly thing, yeah. And I can't think of the cat's name. Isn't that dumb? And I don't see it here.
It's not dumb because you have so many. Take a look at that list. How can you remember that?
Yeah.
That's why I brought it along.
Yeah, I don't see that listed at all.
I framed those last pieces.
Oh, good.
And
This
is kind of what it would look like, you know, when it's framed.
That's old Chilly Willy.
You can do a lot with it.
Oh, sure. I'll say it really dresses it up. It dramatizes it.
It's fun because, yeah. You know, when you see your name on these, you don't realize you did that many voices.
That's right. I know it, yeah.
You know, it means so much because when I do a display, I know I'm going to do a display someday.
Oh, sure. Oh, right.
This is just pretty nice. Could I get you to...
Sure.
One more.
Yeah, I got
I didn't bring much more than this.
That's okay. That's fine. Happy to do it. I mean, I'm delighted with this guy that wants to get those commercials and make copies, you know, for Filmex.
Well, now you can finally show them.
Sure.
Have an audience for them. Otherwise, right. They just sit here till...
That's right, sure. And they get little private showings.
I'm going to meet with Walter Lant so I can have him sign it also.
Oh, great. Where do you want me to sign it? On Chile?
Here is nice.
Over there?
Yeah.
What do you want me to say? Just
your name and a date.
And the date, okay.
Yeah, I don't like it to have it personalized because then I can't show it in the collection.
You're right. You're right.
People will say, who's Paul?
That's right.
I really think people are kind of offended when they see two Paul all over. You know, I can't.
Yeah. Well, I hate it when they get a little icky.
Yeah.
Like Carol Hemingway wrote a thing on this picture about Dawes who was... and all this baloney and whatever, you know. And she may mean it to a certain extent, but she's probably in a big mood. Well, I've been on her show several times, yeah. And she's kind of fun, but it's not, I've only been with Michael Jackson once, but I mean, there is a real sense of rapport, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And
I listen to them all. I listen to KBC all the time.
Should I put just 278 or February 28th?
That'd be nice to date it, yeah.
Just February 28th?
That's fine.
Okay.
That's a Burmese.
In fact, there was a girl here. She's coming over tomorrow, I think, and she thinks that this cat is from a litter, from her sire that she had given to some breeders because they came out in this sable color, because they're called the blue Burmese sometimes. But this particular sable, she said, "Wow!" The minute I looked at Monroe, so I brought out a little card here that shows where the kennel was. Mm-hmm. And she may recognize the woman.
And
wouldn't that interesting?
That would be fun, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a nice personality.
Oh, yeah. Oh, quick draw.
Ball, Louis. And you know, you can't go out and buy these comic books either.
Oh, no.
They don't sell them anymore.
No.
You have to, you know, go home into a collector's shop or something.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And this guy, and then we're finished.
Okie doke.
I want to thank you once again for
all
of your time. I'm not.
Oh well, listen. I'm happy to do it. I just think you're going to have a heck of a book.
Sure. Yeah, I'm going to have a heck of a book because I've told everyone I'm going to, and that's my style. I paint up the dream first, and then I have to. Don't have to, but then I polish up the ends.
And that great satisfaction when it's all.
Well, I just saw a book by about Max Fleischer. Have you seen that book?
I've heard about it. I haven't seen it.
Yeah, and it was authored by a young man of 22 years of age. And he wrote in the end of the book that he flunked out in high school and that he was born just when the kinescopes, I mean, not the kinescopes, but when Popeye was cheapened just a little bit. That's when he was born, he was saying that he... had a very bad, he used very bad words and he used an example almost like Popeye would say. Mm. And I wrote this book because no one else had bothered to.
Isn't that great?
You know, and it's That's incredible. Terrific. The book is thick and it looks like it would have to be written by an old man who had been there in the studios all those years.
Of course.
But all this guy did was go from the existing Fleischers that are still around.
Right.
And I understand Dave Fleischer's in a motion picture country home.
Yeah, that's right. You're very old. He was at one of the ASIFA
awards
a couple of years ago.
Where Max.
That's the tragedy of old age. You see, you keep going and going and going. You reach, in a way, it's like a wine at the vintage, and the texture and the aroma, everything about it gets very, very fine, and then all of a sudden it starts to turn to vinegar, and that's the sad part, where they have to go to motion picture relief homes and sit around in wheelchairs and, you know, where they mine. It's when the mind starts to go, which is really, to me, the disaster. The body can go, as long as the mind is alert, you know.
They're really fortunate that they have that, though, because once your mind is gone, it doesn't matter where you are.
It doesn't matter.
In fact, it's kind of nice to have that privacy, because you can't be invaded there.
That's it, you're let alone.
And I understand that Max was working on a project when he suddenly... went into some state
where
he couldn't communicate anymore.
Sure.
And
that's it.
He was fortunate they have that place
to go to.
I heard all that from Iggy Wolfington.
Yeah.
He was telling me about the rights. And I guess, here's something.
Oh.
I want to frame this. I haven't found a larger one.
Oh, that's great. Uh-huh.
But can you give me a quickie?
On the bottom there?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. This won't soak in too much, will it?
No.
Just in the bottom here. You want some room for?
How about a?
Oh, that's good. Yeah. That's okay.
I'm not this much of an autograph hound. It's just it personalizes the collection so much.
Oh sure. I just put 278 there. It's easier to.
These I got out of all these old comic books. That's fine.
I guess this is probably the best spot up here where it's kind of open.
Wherever.
Yeah.
I really like these because you can frame these and they tell a story all by itself.
Oh, sure.
I mean, you know, because this is, that's the end of the cartoon right there.
Oh, right, yeah. Oh, that's a good spot, yeah.
And with the, about the...
Well, the thing I found, too, is that just like when I was going along, all these happenstances, so-called, it almost seems as if they were planned, you know? And the same way in meeting you and seeing what you're doing and your background, the things you've done so far, it relates because somebody might say to me, we need a guy who does so-and-so. I say, I know the guy, you know? It all works. It interrelates. All the people that have been in my workshop, they're giving that... They're giving each other jobs. You see what I mean?
Sure.
If they belong to the same club. And that's neat.
Well, they know if they're going to help somebody, that they may get, be helped themselves
sure.
by them.
You know? That's right. Yeah. And then they end up working on the same deals together.
Paul Mayer's Children's Television Archive.